Welcome. How you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm all right, thanks very much. I saw you've had the week off work,
I have had the
and
week off work.
you were out in nature.
I was out in nature with the wife on Monday. So it's been mentioned before, I live near Rochdale, North East Manchester, near a place called Hollingworth Lake. Beautiful,
Yes,
beautiful
lovely.
lake. 5 stars on TripAdvisor. I don't know
Ah,
why,
for a
but
lake.
it's lovely. It's beautiful, but 5 stars is going some. And we found out they were after some volunteers to plant some trees. So we did.
Brilliant.
The Monday off, the weather was okay, so we went up and they've got to plant 8,000 trees in this field.
8,000. That sounds
By
like a
the end of
lot.
March.
Wow.
I was quite made up because I thought it was 800, and we planted the time we were there between me and the wife,
Or shell, as
we must have done
she's
about
more commonly known.
35.
Yeah, 35. That's pretty
Shell, yeah.
good.
And then one of the other volunteers came over to do the same job that we were doing. So we actually, between the three of us, we did 50 in an
Wow.
hour.
In
So I
an
was like,
hour.
we did 50. That's really good for 800. And then when we finished it, no, it's 8,000. I went, ah, oh, bugger. That's like a drop in the ocean.
Brilliant. No, that's really good.
But yeah, I mean, it'll be nice in 30 years' time, to walk, take a walk up there and see them.
Lovely. Okay,
That'll be
good.
good. But it was nice. I've never done it. I'd always wanted to do it, and it was good to do it. So yeah, love that. The reason I'm off this week is because it's my birthday.
Yes.
I'm the grand old age
Young.
of the same age as you of 46.
We're so middle-aged.
And I received a parcel yesterday from your good self,
Yes.
which was lovely.
Good. Have you had it yet? Have you eaten it?
No, I think the chances we're having it tomorrow, if not over the weekend.
Oh, lovely.
Off the back of our conversation last week, or last episode about, is it marbles? Maples?
Mabel's, I would say.
Maples. You're toad in the hole.
Yes.
So I'm excited. I'm excited for that. Thank you ever so much.
I was inspired, and I was looking at the Instagram page, as you say, following our conversation about it with I think when we spoke to Bruce, he said how much he liked Mabel's Yorkshire puddings, didn't he? And I thought, do you know what? It's one of the things I keep thinking, oh, I'll do that one day. And I thought, do you know what? Sod it, I'm going to do it. And I thought, yeah, it's Wes's
Yeah.
birthday. Why don't I send him some as well? So, toad in the holes. So I sent
Thanks.
three. That's one for you, one for Shell, and one for Josh. Unless
Well, for Josh,
you want
yes.
all of them. It's entirely
I
up to you.
will get told off if I do
Yeah, but me and Lou had one between us last week, and it was fine.
that.
Like, you could have
Right,
both,
okay.
the whole thing to yourself, but we had it, one between us, and it was fine. Yeah, and
Okay,
obviously
cool.
filled with the Vosages sausage, so that bit's good. So yeah, and
Believe so.
podcast exclusive. I've been in touch with
Cool.
Mabel's, and they're going to come and join us on the pod.
Yay!
Yes,
Amazing.
so that's exciting. Anyway, some sad news now.
Oh
This is sad news.
no.
A post on Instagram yesterday from the barn near Lutterworth.
No.
Yeah, they're going to be closing down. And actually, by the time this episode goes out, they will have
Oh,
closed down. So the 9th of March
wow.
is the last day of opening. So,
that's sad.
There we go. Really sad. But, you know, loads of venues closing down, not specifically vegan venues.
But, that's what we said before, isn't it? You can, you know, we know that these vegan places are shutting down, but that generally places are shutting down.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's,
so it's really
your box,
sad.
Your box standard restaurant can be shutting down. Because...
That's it. That's yeah. it. But hopefully they'll, you know, maybe they'll find somewhere with a location that's got a higher footfall, perhaps, because where it was, there's no passing trade. No one was going to be walking past and think, oh, why don't we pop in there?
Yeah.
You know, so maybe if they can find a town centre venue, that might help. But we'll remember the good times and hope for some more good times in the future. But thanks. Thanks, The Barn, for being great.
Yeah.
There we go. So we've got an awesome guest coming up, and we know that because we've already spoken to him. And it's a really good chat. So
yes,
hope you enjoy it. And if you do enjoy it, why don't you tell us? Or even better, tell some other people. So you could leave a review on a podcast platform of choice. You can rate. You could subscribe to us. You can come and find us on Instagram at How I Vegan Podcast. Or you could send us an email. Where would you send an email to, Wes?
You just send it to howiveganpodcast@gmail.com.
Our guest in this episode has been vegan since 1992, which makes him one of our ancient vegans. He's a former US Army paratrooper, a martial artist, vegan chef, musician, author of the books Vegan Strong and The Adventures of Sergeant Piggy, is fluent in Japanese and has travelled the world. Our guest is Bill Muir, a.k.a. Sergeant Vegan. Welcome.
Thank you guys for having me.
How are you
Very
doing?
Welcome.
Good. I woke up early, got a good workout in, so I'm fully awake and functional.
Excellent. That's better than I feel, and it's 7:30 in the evening. So excellent. Good work. So you're in the US, aren't you? Whereabouts?
I'm in sunny California, though today it is overcast, and lately it's been raining. And man, since we pay a lot of money to live here for the good weather, I'm like, man, I want my money back.
I live in the north of England. Come and live here. This is terrible.
No, they have to pay you to live there, don't they, Wes?
I'm from Philadelphia, yep. Which if you've ever heard, there's a show called It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yes.
That is it's a joke because it's usually not sunny in Philadelphia. It's like it easily 7 months out of the year you have shit weather. It's either are we allowed to say bad words or should
Oh fuck
I,
yeah.
Okay. Absolutely.
Oh, that's good. So it's usually shit weather, and like occasionally you'll be there when it's not shit weather, but it's a lie. It's going to be shit weather if it's.
Oh wow. Okay, that's something to bear in mind. Well, which bit of California?
I'm in LA, so
wow.
I wouldn't say that all the stereotypes about LA are true, but the we're here for the good weather part is true. Like when it dips below 50 degrees Fahrenheit, which for you guys would be what? Like chilly, but not actual cold.
Okay.
People start putting on scarves and other kind of bullshit. Like it's ridiculous, but now that I live here, I'm like, it's, you know, it's not t-shirt and shorts weather. Well, I don't want anything to do with it.
No,
I can drive in a little bit of rain. Like, fuck that shit. Like, and I acknowledge that it's ridiculous. And I acknowledge, given that I grew up on the East Coast and I was in the military, I should be tougher than that. But I'd prefer not to have to live every day tough if I don't have to.
Yeah.
You know? When I was in Afghanistan, at one point, it was 135 degrees Fahrenheit, which I don't know what the translation to Celsius is, but it's fucking, it's absurd. Peanut butter melts. You can drink peanut butter as it's a straight liquid. because I've done it and that's how I know. When it would go down to 80, 85 degrees Fahrenheit, which is still, I mean, for most places hot, my teeth would be chattering because it was so cold. Because that's a 50 degree difference.
Yeah. So 135 Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
57 degrees Celsius, which is, that is nuts.
So you can acclimatize to anything, to any degree of easy or any degree of difficult. You can get you. I'm sure people who live in the art, like why you would live in Alaska, I don't know, especially after watching a little bit of the new season of True Detective. I don't know why anyone would choose to live in that, but people do. And if you, you know, you get used to that and then it's, you know, our chilly day, I'm sure you're, you know, wearing a bikini or something like that.
Only the weekends.
Yeah. Excellent.
I was in the Middle East early 2000s. And
well, you were in Oman, weren't you?
I was in Oman. I was there for 6 months and saw a lot of you guys there who were working with you, actually. But I remember being on the airfield and it was like it hit 52 degrees, which I don't know what that is in Fahrenheit, but that must be 100. And
if we said 115, 120 is in the 130s, I would say that's somewhere between the 120s and 130s, which is is absurdly hot for those who don't feel like doing the math. Absurdly hot.
Yeah, and then and at nighttime, it would drop to like 15 degrees. It was like absolutely freezing because the drop of temperature was so vast. It was mad.
That's incredible.
It's madness.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Bill, I mentioned that you're an ancient vegan since 1992. And we'll come on to your vegan story in a bit, but tell us about the books that you've written. I can see the poster for Vegan Strong behind you. Oh, and the Adventures of Sergeant Piggy as well. Tell us about your books.
Sure. So I wrote Vegan Strong because I wanted a book that talked about veganism, but from a non-hippie perspective. So I figured the best way to sell veganism to the quote unquote normies and the regular people, like just picture the people who might be inhabiting Florida, I guess you would say, trying to make the appeal for a better world to people who might not characterize themselves as, I don't know, liberals or whatever, just to be able to talk to the average person, the average American. So I wrote it like how to be vegan, but wrote it like an army field manual, which I thought would be kind of the least hippie kind of thing I could think of. Then I thought, how do I follow that up? And I thought, you know, I've seen a lot of kids' books on being vegan, and it's usually some sad, weepy stuff. But if you're a kid, man, life is amazing. So trying to sell something as awesome as, you know, eating healthy and trying to save the planet as, you know, some tears and sob stories kind of sucked. So kind of going along with the same, like, de-hippifying vegan, I wrote The Adventures of Sergeant Piggy with a strong protagonist who is military, but is also a pig. So, you know, take it for what it is. It's supposed to be a kid's story. And then I thought, how do I follow that up? And the pandemic was kind of a dark spot for most of us, but especially those in the healthcare field and being a registered nurse working in COVID for that whole period. It was pretty rough. So I thought, you know what, let me write kind of a darker horror novel about what the slaughter industry is and channel all that anxiety at least I personally was feeling during the pandemic. And that's what you can see in the back, Dead Meat is all about. It's the process of killing animals for food is pretty awful, just like a horror movie. And I thought, you know what, I wouldn't really have to jump to, you know, through many hoops to take that experience of the awful that we do on a daily basis as human beings and just call it necessary to turn that all into horror novels. So that's what Dead Meat is. It's meant to be action horror, but it's basically veganism 101, but told through that perspective.
Nice. I like that.
Sounds cool.
because it's the sort of thing that somebody might read, but the sort of subliminal message is hopefully getting through to them that might make them think about it. Yeah, maybe it's not that subliminal. Maybe it's liminal.
I would think they would get it because I did turn the messaging down a little bit. I'm still at like an 11. Like it was at a 50, and then I was like, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, and I was like, you know what? Let me turn it down just to like in Spinal Tap, as they say, turn it down. They turn it up to 11. I turned it down because it really was over the top. So I was like, all right, let me tone it down that a little bit, and I'll tone up the violence and, you know, just make it, I wouldn't say overbearingly violent, but I wanted to drive home the awful of the slaughter industry and make it seem, I mean, basically put a mirror up to it, because it really is awful. And while I can understand the argument of like the, we have to do this, and, you know, if we're going to look back hundreds of years ago where people admittedly weren't very bright. But nowadays, man, with the internet, and we're getting in these flying tubes, and you can go anywhere in the world, and people are going out of space, and, you know, getting at a submarine and going down to the Titanic, hopefully not and one of the cheaper ones, but
sometimes coming back. Yeah.
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 Not, you know, you shouldn't get it on a budget submarine.
No. I think that's... don't order your submarine from Wish. I mean, that's just ridiculous.
But yeah, it makes absolutely no sense nowadays with everything we know to still raise animals to kill them for food. It's ridiculous. And while we have made a lot of steps, we still have a lot of work to do, but I'm going to keep screaming about this till my dying breath, that I just can't express enough how annoyed I am. And that isn't even a great word to use at people and how they keep this whole slaughter industry up, and the fact that it's killing my patients because people are eating stuff they shouldn't eat, which is giving them cardiovascular disease and killing them. They're destroying the planet because this planet is not meant to have this many people ingesting this many dead animals, and therefore the methane and CO2 emissions are heating up the place. And lastly, but not leastly, the animals, if you call yourself an animal lover, or at least not a piece of shit, killing something for no reason, or paying money to someone to rape an animal for you so you could have some milk, it's just ridiculous. And if you ask the average person, hey, is it okay to kill an animal or rape an animal, they would act like, of course not. But they'll then go with that same breath and then go to McDonald's and order themselves some food, which it's that dissonance that
yes,
cognitive dissonance that makes no sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not too much of a leap to take what happens in a slaughterhouse and turn it into a horror story, because pretty much is. So yeah, that's great. Awesome. So tell us then, your vegan story. So before you do, I said you're an ancient vegan. That's someone we term anyone who's been vegan for 10 years or more.
What? So it's 10 not years? That's a low bar, man.
Do you know what? We're approaching 6 years, and I'm starting to think we need to put it up a bit, Wes, because we're not ancient vegans, are we? So it's not based on your age. It's based on length of veganism.
I would put it at 15, because I've met some a very small amount of people that have been vegan as long as me, and an even smaller amount who wasn't that much. Like let's put it at 15.
Okay, that sounds reasonable.
15 sounds like not that long, but still like you're, you know, 15s. Yeah, that's okay. A good amount of time to do anything.
Yeah. Okay, so take us back to 1992 then. What was that, the Atlanta Olympics? Take us back to 92.
You know, where was the Olympics then? I don't know. I couldn't tell you.
I think that was Atlanta.
I was in a quiz the other day. It was Barcelona. I was in a quiz last week, and that was the answer.
Yes.
Really?
Well done.
What a timely quiz. So 1992, I would have been a freshman in college. And yeah. Yeah.
So how old is freshman? I never really understood that when they talk about freshman and sophomore and
So those
sophomore.
terms are sophomore, freshman, sophomore, junior, senior. That's the 4 years of college. It can also be, if you go to a traditional high school in America, that's also the first, second, third, and fourth year. But that's with the American system. Because I say that because junior high then is like, I think you get junior and senior year, that the last two, but then their junior high is kind of almost with your primary school grouping. And I believe Japan does that too. They don't have the same designator, at least from what I remember when I taught there. But yeah, so I in my freshman year of college, on a, well, I should start on how I went vegetarian, because that kind of bleeds into how I went vegan. So I went vegetarian as a, I wish it was the an awesome like stand against oppression and all the bullshit that's goes with animal ag, but instead it was more of a jerk move, because my mom had asked me to give up something for Lent, and I was like, what can I tell her that's gonna be like shocking, and as like only like an 18-year-old punk rock kid can say to his mom, like, what would that be? And I'm like, what can I tell this lady? And just on a whim, I was like, oh, I'm going vegetarian for Lent, which, for those that don't know, Lent is a 40-day period. We're actually in Lent at the time of that we're recording this now. It starts sometime in like February and goes up until Easter. And I was raised Catholic. I wasn't really Catholic then, and I'm certainly not now, but my parents real big into that stuff. So I said, okay, for Lent, for that 40 days, I'm going to go vegetarian. Well, my parents lost their minds, and almost anyone else I told that I wasn't eating meat for this 40 days acted almost like somehow I wasn't, you know, drinking water, or I wasn't going to be breathing for 40 days. And how was I going to do that? It was some kind of like, one weekend I wasn't dead, I was like some kind of modern miracle. Like, you know how they have those St. Bernards that'll go rescue someone with something in their, I think they wear a little barrel around their neck. Well, in my case, they would send me a St. Bernard with a cheeseburger, and it's a little barrel. Like that, if I wasn't getting meat three times a day, like clearly I was going to fucking die. As you could guess, that was not the case. I wrestled in college. I felt pretty good through Lent. And so toward the end of Lent, when people asked me, it's like, somehow you didn't die. Like, are you going to first meal out of Lent on Easter, are you going to go back to eating meat? I was like, you know, I feel great. I don't know why I would. I think I'm just going to keep doing this. Not going to put any meaning to it at this point, because I didn't know any vegetarians, let alone vegans. I didn't know anyone I could talk to about this. And there wasn't an internet that I could just search out like what it's like being vegetarian or vegan. And I don't think I was really cognizant of the importance of that choice, other than I had chosen randomly to do something that I thought might get a rise out of my poor folks. So fast forward a little bit into that year as a freshman in college, I got a hold of a pamphlet at a punk rock show from PETA. And back in the day, for those that were born after the internet, we had to, if you were in bands, you had to write something called a zine, and to get your band ideas across. And if you were an organization like PETA, if you wanted people to either give you donations or just start believing in whatever you had to type up little pamphlets and give them out. So I got a hold of one of these and started reading about how accidentally choosing to be vegetarian was such a good thing for the planet. And I started thinking about it, and I was like, whoa, I've stumbled blindly into something good that aligns with my values as a punk rock kid. Fast forward through that year into the summer, And I was at yet another show, and I got a hold of yet another PETA pamphlet, and it was talking about milk and the dairy industry, and basically how if you're going to have a cheese sandwich, you might as well make it a cheeseburger, because you're, even though it's, you're trying to do a little less harm as a vegetarian, you're still contributing to that overall system of raising animals for food and then killing them and killing their offspring. And it just sucks. And I thought about it. And at that moment, I had a binary choice that was presented to me. Am I okay with animal cruelty? The answer is yes. Then I guess I just keep doing what I'm doing, eating animals to some extent, or even being vegetarian. Or if the answer is no, if I'm not okay with animal cruelty, if I don't want to vote with my dollar for animal cruelty, then I have to be vegan. And by then I had heard the word vegan and what it meant. And, you know, and I went vegan. And I thought at that point that it was basically a culinary death warrant, that I was never again going to have ice cream. I was never going to again going to have pizza. You know, I was never again going to have a burger the way I had when I was growing up. And I was basically just like, you know what? If that's what it's going to be, if that's what it has to be to live, I guess the kids would say, my authentic life, you know, to be true to my values.
Yes.
Then that's what I was going to do. And as you would guess, for that minimally, that first 5 years, it sucked. I had peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, sometimes for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You know, it's dry cereal. No ice cream was just not a thing. So not even a version of it until later when I froze soy milk and then poured chocolate syrup and mashed it up. And did that taste good? For those who are thinking that I'm giving you a DIY recipe, no, that shit sucked. Now, obviously, duh. There was something called Nature Burger that I'm sure nobody listening to this knows. And I'm sure you guys have never heard of Nature Burger, right?
Nope.
Nature Burger is the equivalent. It's a mix that you're supposed to make. To add water at home, make into a patty and fry. And that's what the early veggie burgers were. But it basically tasted like someone took a little shovel and found some gravel and dirt and twigs and put it in like a fucking little plastic thing and sent it to you. It was really bad. Let me put it this way. Everybody that sent me food and stuff while I was in Afghanistan were definitely amazing people. But whoever sent me Nature Burger, fuck you. Fuck you to them. I handed that shit. I handed it to a local and he looked at me like what is
why
this?
Do you hate me?
I was like, here you go, man. It's free. Just take it.
Brilliant.
Yeah. So that that first couple years was no fun at all being vegan. Mm. And then I moved to Japan and trying to navigate being vegan back, you know, I guess at the advent of the internet, but still not in any useful way, at least in Japan, navigate veganism through there. It just meant, well, at least they had some decent tofu. So I would pretty much eat tofu and rice for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, which beat peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, but not by a lot. You know?
I could imagine the novelty would wear off pretty soon if you're having it three meals a day. Yeah.
Yeah. And then nowadays people don't give vegans as much pushback, but occasionally people will, but it's, you know, you would have to be somewhere really, in America, we would say red statey, very conservative. But if you think of conservative as closed-minded and not worldly and never been anywhere and never done anything, you know, and with limited education, kind of as really as I understand conservative to be, you would have to be somewhere, some super backwoods place for someone to give you a lot of shit for it. But then before, when people didn't even know what the word is. So if you would say, excuse me, what are the vegan options? And then they wouldn't know what vegan was. And then you have to explain, well, vegan means this, that, you know, and then they're like, well, there are no vegan. I didn't know what that word was, but now I do. There are no options.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In Japan, the option usually meant eat some rice and some tofu, which still, I mean, while that's not gonna really sell the lifestyle of people, to quote Homer Simpson, you can't win friends with salad.
No, that is true.
But I mean, personally, weirdly, I've come kind of full circle now that we have more vegan options than ever. As someone that's trying to look good and eat for athleticism, because I spend so much time in the gym that I want to look kind of like I work out. Rice and tofu, salad and vegetables, that's pretty much the best stuff you can eat. But as a kid, there, you know, and as a kid, I defined, I went vegetarian, vegetarian at 18, vegan at 19. So at that age, you know, I would have considered murdering someone for a Beyond Burger, you know, like now that they have Haagen-Dazs ice cream, that might have been something I would have done as well. But now that they have that, now that I'm 50 and not a teenager anymore, I'm like, should I eat ice cream every day? Probably not. I'm very grateful that it exists and all the great vegan options and vegan stuff. And I can't sing enough praises for all the companies that have the vegan options and all the restaurants that have vegan stuff for when I go out. But should I or really anyone be eating a lot of that stuff every day? Like, no, man. I mean, that's
still ultra processed food, isn't it? Which isn't all right. There's no death in it, but it's still not that good for you.
My only thing, since I'm mentioning this and since we're saying that, is we don't want to go down the, you know, the whataboutism path when it comes to vegan junk food and vegan stuff.
Oh, no.
We often will say like, okay, well, a Beyond Burger is processed and you shouldn't be eating it every day. Often, you know, animal ad companies and fast food joints and people who don't want to change will perk up and say, oh, so basically what you're telling me is eating a Beyond Burger is more or less the same thing as eating an animal hamburger. And if it's going to, I'm like, no, man, that's not what we're saying. Like, we're talking about optimal health. If I'm going to talk to someone about optimal health, I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to say that eating a chocolate bar every day is going to be good for you. But there's definitely a plethora of benefits of not having an animal-based chocolate bar if you're going to have a chocolate bar.
But in the same way, you wouldn't eat a animal hamburger every day, hopefully. So you can't compare that to eating a Impossible Burger or a Beyond Burger every day. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you are going to eat a burger, having a vegan one is a lot better than not having a vegan one, if that makes sense. I don't know if I've explained that very well.
True, and also agree, your diet should not, unless you're you know, Wimpy from Popeye, your diet should not be primarily based in hamburgers.
No. And he always used to get beaten up by Popeye,
by Bluto,
Popeye, the hero, was the one who ate the spinach.
And let me first mention that I will gladly pay you Tuesday for a Beyond or Impossible Burger today. Sorry, nobody reads Popeye, nor do I, but I just had to say that because it...
Okay, fine. Yeah, that was straight over my head. Sorry.
You missed nothing, but it was... I remember Saturday morning cartoons here in America. That was a catchphrase from Wimpy, which, yeah.
So somebody listening will get it and they'll be cracking
someone
up.
Someone will.
It's
yeah,
not good.
Definitely.
Somebody somewhere thought that reference was amazing. So for that one person, that's for you.
100%. So excellent. When did you join the military then, and how did that sort of pan out alongside veganism?
Well, thank you very much for that question. So I was living in Japan from the time I graduated university in 1990. Well, I graduated in 95 in Japan from 96 to 2002. So I experienced 9/11, the 9/11 attacks through the prism of living abroad. I got a text on my phone in Kanji late at night walking home about the attacks. And I was like, because of the time difference, I was like, what's going on with two buildings in New York and a fire on a plane. I'm like, I'm tired, and that, but that's some word salad. Like, is that what does that all mean? Fast forward, I went to a neighbor's house because I didn't have a TV because I was too punk for a TV, and watched it all in real time, but from Japan. And the impact was, man, being an expat and seeing that from another country, it just rocked my world that that all was happening. And I resolved that I wanted to do something about it, which I get, as you know, from a prism of where we're at now in 2024, seems and sounds pretty ridiculous, but I guess living my punk rock values meant that I wouldn't just sit around and wait for somebody else to do something, that I would be part of it, part of it. And now, as a vegan and as kind of, I would say, left of center, I was like, well, what could I do to positively make a better world? And if this was going to, we were going to, if the America was going to get involved and do something about this, what could I do? And I thought, you know, kind of along the lines with being vegan, if I became a medic, I would be able to help save lives, both of locals, the enemy, whatever, or our own. And so I left Japan, kind of took a couple months, and then in 2000, and that would have been, the attacks were 9/11. I was in America by 2002, and by January 2003, I was in basic training. What a culture shock it was, both being back in America after 8 years, and then being in the military, being socialized to be in the military. Very different world, very different everything. And of course, my experience as a vegan, and that when people were still not really used to even knowing what that word was, trying to maneuver that in basic training was a new level of suckiness, as you could well guess.
Yeah,
I can imagine.
So so the practicality of that often meant eating stuff that sucked, basically like going back to when I first went vegan. So it would mean it wasn't even as good as what I had endorsed earlier, which was eating peanut butter and jelly sandwiches sometimes three times a day, because they made it very hard to get peanut butter because they were really worried about people being overweight, even though I lost 25 pounds in basic training. Because, you know, the military is not a place, and rightfully so in some ways, but for people who are on their own schedule, doing their own things. They make a decision and they have it hit everybody. Because especially if they're like, well, for this is going to benefit 60% of people, then everybody has to get hit with the decision. So I was practically looking at dry cereal for breakfast. Lunch would have been really low quality Wonder Bread, lettuce sandwiches, and dinner might be dry rice with more bread. Peanut butter if I could get it. And while they have improved the situation of eating by having impossible meat, impossible foods, and most dining facilities in the United States military, they still don't have a vegan MRE, which is what we often eat in the field. And so they haven't totally fixed that, which I think is coming along with America finally kind of like, you know, getting all of its quote unquote ducks in a row when it comes to a green agenda. I think that's something that we also need to do. I'm not saying make the whole vegan military, because that's not what anyone's ever been asking. We're just asking for being able to feed our servicemen and women what they want to eat, and not just some slop dropped in your tray.
Yeah,
you know, even prisoners get to choose to be vegan.
I was just going to say, yeah, you're serving your country. You should be given some sort of, there should be some sort of benefit for it, shouldn't there?
We're not even asking for a benefit. We're just asking for, it doesn't even have to be, you know, delicious. Nobody's even asking for, you know, deliciousness or wonderful cakes and pies and ice cream were just saying, like, hey, I need to get enough calories so yeah. I can do this shit and not fall on my face. And in this day and age, most kids realize that joining the military is tough and there's not that many benefits to it, and are not doing it, especially given how dangerous it is and how much, you know, if you could do anything, you got to make a risk reward, you know, benefit or loss kind of plan. And with the military, there's definitely more risks than there is reward. For me, as an idealist, I was all in on the whole thing. I realized it was a lot of risk and very, very minimal reward. When I was in Japan, I made $25 an hour, which is a lot or a little, depending on what you're looking at. But for the 90s and 2000, to basically sit and teach an English class with very little prep, and I would just make a cup of coffee, go in and like teach this class, basically pull the lesson out of my ass. It was extremely easy. You just have to be able to talk. Like, there's, and to go from that to like risking your life or break, you know, all the possible back breaking nonsense you're going to do, and stress, to under $5 an hour. I don't know if it would even be, it would sometimes be pennies. Cause when I was in Afghanistan, I often work 24 hours in a row. So if you tab all that up,
yeah,
you know, yeah, risk reward, I get it. So
there's nothing better than a hunk of prime Labrador steak, wonderfully marbled. And that is almost entirely dependent on how it's produced. Elwood's Organic Dog Meat has complete control of this entire journey. So I'm here at Elwood's Farm to find out a little more about it.
Welcome to Elwood Farms.
Thank you very much, Elwood.
I hear you do a bit of barbecuing.
I do a little bit of barbecuing every now and then, yes.
From a chef's point of view, consistency is key for everything.
It doesn't matter if it's a Rottweiler ribeye, a Pyrenees mince, or a lab sirloin.
You can always tell when the dog comes from a place where it was well reared. And every step has to be right, doesn't it? Oh, you should see these guys. So, from an Elwood's point of view, there's complete traceability.
Absolutely. Unrivaled traceability, so it's fine.
Every single piece of dog meat?
Yeah, from pup to farmer's market.
Everything the dog's been fed?
Everything about it.
For each dog?
Yeah. Only Marks and Spencer's and Whole Foods do this.
Where else can people order from?
From elwooddogmeat.com. That's ELWOOD dogmeat.com.
For top quality meat from dogs for people. Meat that's local, sustainable, and humanely harvested. There's only Elwood's Organic Dog Meat.
They seem pretty friendly, don't they? It's more responsive to me than my kids, to be honest.
This episode is supported by V-Gums.
V-Gums is a plant-based, eco-friendly gummy supplement brand which is perfect for the whole family.
V-Gums are vegan, gluten-free and made with natural flavours.
And we have a unique discount code for How I Vegan podcast listeners. You can get 20% off any one-time purchase or your first subscription order.
Just enter the code HOW20 at the checkout to claim your discount.
Head to vegums.com for more details.
That's vegums.com.
So, Bill, what's the best thing about being vegan?
Best thing about being vegan? I mean, as you guys call me, an ancient vegan, at this point, it's... God, I think a lot of the stuff that was, you know, was a part of it is now so, you know, like every day to me, that it's only when I do a podcast like this to talk about it, or if I'm specifically talking to someone like randomly about it, that I really think about it. It's, but I guess it would be having my everyday actions aligned with my values, meaning I don't think it's okay to be destroying the planet, farming animals for food that we don't need to eat. And since I'm not paying for that, I feel like I'm kind of like karmically living my best life, versus I feel like almost everybody else, other than I think 95% of people would agree with us that it's wrong to kill animals for no reason. The 5% of the planet who are psychopaths would be like, "Yeah, fuck that shit." But they would also be, you know, the 5% that are intentionally harming children and stuff like that as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't really know if I value their opinion. Everyone else more or less agrees with us. They're just not living accordingly because they're either too brainwashed or lazy to change. Most other people are somewhere in between that. I think a majority of the people that I work with at the hospital, I think if they did have a little bit more intestinal fortitude, they would be right there with us.
Okay. Awesome. We're going to get into the nuts and bolts now, the details. What's your favorite vegan product at the moment?
Ooh, thank you very much for asking. I think one of the things that I'm most stoked on, and these are little, when I think of little vegan products and little trinkets like that, it's the bullshit you shouldn't be eating every day, but it's the bullshit that kind of is awesome.
It's like the Ben and Jerry's, isn't it? And things like that.
Yeah. Reese's finally put out a vegan Reese's peanut butter cup. Have you tried them?
No, I haven't. I've heard
my
that they've done
wife
it. Like,
loves
come
them.
On.
Wait one second. I can actually
show you. Oh, this is going to change the world.
Look at that. Reese's plant bag.
And just for you guys, I'm going to eat one. I don't know if the video is being captured, but that's what that shit looks like. Now, for a limited time, and by limited, I mean wherever, as long as they feel like having it, you can buy these on the Great Satan Amazon. And that's how I got these. And they're $2 American per package. The whole box is like $20. Is it worth it? Probably not. You know, should you be eating this every? Should anyone be having one of these every day? No. But just the fact that it exists makes me happy. I have a DIY recipe in Vegan Strong. So if you can't get a hold of that, and as long as you can get chocolate and peanut butter, you can make this at home. But the fact that I could have this without having to make the recipe, it's kind of nice.
Yeah, and that you enjoy it, and we'll sit here watching you enjoy it.
We're just going to watch you eat.
Yeah, it's good. Now, does this change anyone's life? No. Should you eat that every day? I mean, you could, but should you? I mean, I don't.
No.
I don't, because why? At 50, I'm like, okay, if I'm lifting 5 days a week, I want to feel good and look good. And are you going to feel good and look good eating junk food every day? Vegan otherwise? No, like majority of your diet should be from whole foods. It should be not ultra processed. It should be vegetables, fruits, grains, high protein. I mean, when this is junk, but does it taste pretty good? Yeah.
Fantastic. I love that. We've not had that one before. I'd not even heard of that. The plant-based version. Amazing.
You just accidentally triggered something in my brain. At time of recording, Kraft just came out with a vegan Kraft macaroni and cheese, which I was unable to find today, but I only went to one store to look for it. It's also not a game changer. And that they have many different brands, Daya, however you feel like saying it, has a version of that. What's unique about the Kraft is I believe it's not gluten-free, which I love the glutens. I will kill all the glutens. So I'm not trying to save any of the glutens. For the small percentage of people that are gluten-free, it is nice that they have gluten-free products. But I've always, and I'm sure I'm going to get somebody's anger with this, but I've always been grumpy about plant-based or vegan being lumped in with gluten-free.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's no comparison at all, is it? Doesn't make any sense.
I get why they're doing it. They're like, okay, for all the fussy eaters, let's make one thing for them and great. Mm. But, you know, you can make something gluten-free that's vegan and, you know, because I guess fruit doesn't have a gluten in it. So I guess that's possible if it's a fruit sorbet. And, you know, a lot of the non-dairy ice cream should be gluten-free. But I think when you bake, it's just a bummer when, you know, if you get some vegan pizza and if it's gluten-free, that means probably the crust is going to be like warmed up cardboard. And for those that have never had it, yeah, cardboard doesn't taste good. And the problem when you put the two together is it makes it very difficult to have a solid vegan product. And then when the normies try it, then they're like, oh, this sucks. Vegan sucks. And it's like, no, man, gluten-free generally sucks. And that's why you're not liking this. You can do very good things with vegan, and probably you can do great things with gluten-free if they're not vegan, but when you kind of combine the two, it makes it very difficult to make a good product.
Yes.
Mm. Totally. So what advice would you give to somebody who came to you wanting to make the change? With your years and years of experience.
So with my years and years of experience, I'd say the easiest thing to do is instead of going cold tofurkey, as someone once called it, I would say crowd out the animal-based products. And don't feel like you have to go cold turkey. So meaning it quickly and easily replace your dairy-based milk with a plant-based milk. Start replacing things in recipes with vegan or plant-based options. Don't feel the need to never eat animal products at first. Just say, okay, I'm gonna have this instead and that instead and this instead. And sooner or later, most of your products that you're buying are going to be vegan by default. And then after that, it's basically you're just mopping up and then just trying to say, okay, if I go out here, I'm going to go here instead of there, as in out to eat. And then, you know, the little incidentals like what's in, I don't know, not using honey or things like that. Mm-hmm. I think that makes it a lot easier than like all of a sudden you're making some kind of like hard change. I get the idea of when you watch, if you watch some heavy hitting documentary, you watch Earthlings and you're like, oh, I can never support this again. I mean, all right, man, I was vegan for decades before that came out. I'm glad that you're finally joining us there, but I'm more interested in people making the change and sticking with it than making some like dramatic gesture overnight and then realizing they can't do it. And I think incremental change generally has more compliance. I think, well, half of my lexicon is things that we would say in the hospital, like with compliance or and stuff like that. I don't think most people would say that, but in my brain, it processes things with that, like saying, like patient is non-compliant with care and stuff. So anyway, long story short, I think you would have more of a chance with compliance in your diet if it's a short-term incremental and does not feel like some kind of crazy shock. So, you know, if you're going to eat a snack, make it a vegan snack. If you're going to have chili, instead of having buying a pound of, you know, ground up cow, put a pound of impossible food in it. I mean, possible meat in there, or Beyond, or whatever, or this Gardein, or one of the bazillion things. Back in the day, we didn't have that. You had to reinvent the wheel to go vegan, and that was difficult. But I think, you know, I think making it as easy as possible just means don't change anything other than the plug and play concept of eat this and not that. So Pasta, okay. The noodles are probably going to be vegan unless you get some highfalutin bullshit. You know, marinara usually vegan unless they add some pasteurized cheese product to it, which you can usually in most places find a good marinara sauce. Then it's just going to be the meatballs. You're going to either go Gardein meatballs or Impossible sausage. Done. In most places, yep. You're going to be able to find that, at least across the United States of America. And that's easy, and no need to make it any harder than that. You know, I would also recommend all the would-be vegan warriors to not burn themselves out with the anger that everyone else isn't making that jump. What's more important for the movement is more bodies doing this than a few people being ridiculously passionate and angry about it. So what I mean by that is, okay, so you went vegan last year, and now you're not going to eat a meal with your parents, or now you don't have certain friends because of that. Like, that doesn't make sense to me. And it never made sense to me. Like, having a meal with somebody is one of the most normal human interactions there is. So if you're like, if you're at work and you're not going to eat at the same break table with somebody just because they're eating an animal product, like, no, that's ridiculous. Now, sometimes, some circumstances, people go above and beyond the call to be ridiculous. I know, my work at one point, I think that they were bringing in a full roasted pig during special occasion potlucks because there's most of my coworkers are Filipino working in a hospital and all. I wasn't there for that, but I think that's ridiculous. And I'm not talking about just a slab of something. I'm talking they had a face with an apple in the
Yeah. And I think as well, if people who eat animals see you there with a meal that looks delicious, they're surely more likely to think, maybe there's something in this. Maybe I'll try that next time. You know, how many times have you sat in a restaurant and someone said, oh, I wish I'd ordered that because it looks so amazing. And if we take that away from people, they're just going to keep eating the same old dead animals that they've been eating all their lives.
The other thing is, I would say, for it, just general advice, try not to put yourself in a spot where you're ever going to be grumpy about being vegan, especially in front of other people, if you're trying to make vegan look sexy. So if you're going to a potluck at work, make sure you have vegan stuff with you. If they ask you, can you bring something, make sure that's vegan and have that other thing. Or if your family is like, hey, you want to do Thanksgiving dinner with us? Say, of course, can we make all the vegetables vegan? That shouldn't be that big of a deal. And then bring your favorite vegan protein thing with. I think that's going to make it easier and say, hey, can I also bring the dessert? Like, yeah, you are going through a little bit more work, but then, you know, if they look over at you, you're eating the full thing. You're looking happy. You're like, yum, yum, yum. My food is great. Versus like, you know, pulling out the violin and saying like, whoa, it's me, I'm saving the planet, but I
just there with a lettuce leaf.
Yeah, like nobody, like we had said before, like Homer Simpson said, no one, you know, you can't win friends with salad. Like, you're making veganism look anything but, you know, awesome, I think is doing it a disservice. And when we do that, I mean, granted, you're going to be in situations occasionally, you're traveling across the Midwest for one, or you're at your great, great grand something rather parents, and you're in the middle of nowhere and it's now 3 or 4 days in and okay. But if you're in a spot where you could just bring food to an event and not have it be a hardship for you, then why would you, not put the time in to make it work? And I think if you put a little bit of thought in, it's always going to be better. Plus nowadays with technology, not to name drop, but my friend Eric made a app called Happy Cow. If you haven't heard of Happy Cow, download that shit to your phone. Yes. Like, immediately. It makes finding vegan stuff easy.
It's amazing.
And at the end of the day, human beings, including me, unfortunately, we're all lazy. So whatever makes it easier is going to make it easier to continue. It's going to make it easier to keep compliance with. And that's going to make it sustainable. And the more difficult you make it, like it, you can apply this to almost anything in your life, that it, if you find a gym near you, it's going to be easier for you to go to that gym versus a gym that's super far away that you have to, you know, go out of your way and super plan to and plan to go to. I mean, you if you make your life, set yourself up for success and make it easy to do things that are good for you, then you're going to continue to do it.
Yeah.
Great point. Okay. So who's your vegan inspiration?
No, I don't really have that, because when I went vegan, there was nobody that I was particularly inspired by.
No.
For that, because that didn't exist in front of me. But I was inspired specifically, and I would say, I would name drop an American punk band from DC from the 80s called Minor Threat, because starting to listen to Minor Threat and getting into that whole idea of not drinking, not smoking, not doing drugs, I would say that was a gateway for me into thinking of self-improvement through just within yourself. I think if I hadn't gotten into that and the idea of being able to be my authentic self and not caring what other people thought of it, I don't know if I would have ever gone vegan, because, you know, it was one thing deciding not to drink, smoke, or do drugs. And some parts, yeah, being an 18-year-old and, you know, giving up drinking was kind of a kind of a unique and a questionable thing, especially during college, where most people would be getting into that and not giving it up. Mm. But it made it easier, since I had already had, you know, had some practice of telling people no thanks for that and no thanks for that, to then say, oh, okay, I'm going to then take what I'm doing now with not drinking or smoking and now apply that to another part of my life. Now I'm going to apply it to people offering me food or where I'm going to go eat or what I'm going to eat. And I would say definitely Ian MacKay, Minor Threat, and the whole punk movement, I would say that you can't draw a straight line from it. Like, I know people who went vegan later in the 90s were heavily influenced by this band called Earth Crisis, which was huge in the punk and the metal scene and influenced a lot of people around my age, but maybe a little younger. But I had already been vegan when I heard Earth Crisis. So while it made me happy that somebody was making songs about stuff that I believed in, it didn't make me more vegan. I was already a level 10 vegan or something like that.
Yeah.
I think Moby mentions that he was into like Minor Threat, and I think he mentioned Earth Crisis as well. So yeah, it was all around that. That late 80s, early 90s era, wasn't it?
If we're, you said Moby, right?
Yeah.
For those that haven't watched it yet, I can't say enough good things about his movie, Vegan Punk Rock Movie.
Yeah.
Or Punk Rock Vegan Movie. It's one order of that or the other. It's free on YouTube, and thank you to Moby for making it free for everyone to watch. And I'm sure you can make criticisms of the movie, because everybody seems to have an opinion about everything, even if they don't need to these days. But the idea of, you know, making a whole documentary about something that I think people should know about, that the fact that there is such a link between the punk scene, the hardcore scene, and veganism, and that we really were, I guess, the vanguard in making that a thing. I don't know if we made it cool. I don't, you know, I don't know if veganism or will ever be cool, but we definitely were the spearhead of that movement for the longest time, until I guess until the neo hippie yoga people got into it, and then the rest of the normies did. It was us. So I think it was awesome that he made that movie, and I think it's great for people to be able to see that, and it's definitely a record of something that I personally find very important in my life. Whether it's really big and important in the big picture of things, you know, I don't know. I mean,
yeah. He made it with Derek Green, didn't he, from Sepultura as well. He was part of it. Or he's interviewed in it or something, I think.
Oh, yeah. There's people from a lot of really, really big bands that are part of that. Toby from H2O, you know, the whole Earth Crisis. Rob Zombie's vegan. I mean, there's... Yeah. It's if you think about the amount of people who are in that industry and the entertainment industry who are vegan, it's a lot. And, you know, there's a few politicians as well. I don't know if it makes it, again, I don't know if it makes it cool, but it's definitely something that we wouldn't have seen even 10 years ago. So I think it's amazing that Moby's shining a light on that. And I went to the premiere here in LA. I had to leave early because I had to go to work. But the fact that it's on YouTube for anyone to see, if you're listening to this and you haven't watched it, please go on YouTube, do a little search and watch it. I think you'll be pretty stoked.
So are there any like local restaurants to you that you like the most or frequent a lot or anything like that?
So if you guys come to LA, there's a place called Veggie Grill that I think is doing amazing things for vegan. And the reason being, other than the name and that it has veggie in the name, there's nothing that screams vegan restaurant about it. It feels very middle of the road. It's a fast casual restaurant. It's very solid. They have burgers, but it's not just burgers. I think places like Veggie Grill are making vegan awesome. There's a whole bunch of comes and goes kind of frou-frou places. Personally, I'm not a big fan of frou-frou vegan. Only in that I feel like it's not accessible for everyone and it's not something that you're going to go to every day. You know, I think when there's a price point that's like a reasonable price point, it's not going to be as cheap as McDonald's, but it's not going to make you have like sticker shock. I think that becomes something that you could go to more almost every day. And yeah. I think it's important. And I also really love that Veggie Grill took out the a lot of the vegan propaganda you normally see in vegan spots. And I think that's kind of important in that I think it sometimes detracts from the deliciousness of the food and might be seen as obnoxious to the normies. And while I would go to a place with lots of vegan propaganda and be cool with it, I think we're at the point in the movement where it can't just be about, you know, the quote unquote ancient vegans, like you had called me earlier. It can't just be about us that are already fully bought into the movement. It has to be about welcoming new people in. It has to be about expanding the breadth of the movement. It has to be about sustainability, and high prices are not going to be sustainable for the movement. You still want to be able to pay your service workers well enough. You still want to be able to turn a profit. But if you have sticker shock and you're like, damn, I'm not going to be able to like afford food the rest of the week because I went to some place and had a $100 meal, that's not going to be sustainable. But Veggie Grill and places like that, it makes vegan seem nice and normal, like you had gone to any other restaurant and it was delicious, except it was plant-based, you know, better for the planet, better for the animals, and better for your health. And the presentation, solid. I think the place called Next Level Burger just bought them out. Next Level Burger is a vegan burger joint, which I think is popular. I think it's from Colorado. But okay. Yeah, places like Veggie Grill, I think, doing it great. I really appreciate that. They also have a couple major fast food chains that carry a plant-based burger if you're trying to do even cheaper than that. Personally, if I'm at the point where I'm going to go or consider a fast food place, I would just rather make it at home. But that's the luxury of living in 2024 versus back in the day that didn't exist.
True. Okay. So, having experienced 32 years as a vegan now.
Damn, that makes me feel old, but yeah.
But obviously you've seen a lot in all that time. Do you have any hope for the future?
I always have hope for the future. As Bad Brain said, I got that positive mental attitude, that PMA. I always have hope that things will be better. And I'm going to put it into perspective. Yeah, it's probably, getting at least my country on board with climate change agenda and getting a lot of the, brainwashed, quote unquote, meatheads on board with this very, very difficult. However, if we look big picture and that 30 years ago, 32 years ago, when I went vegan, people didn't know what vegan was. There was poor at best, amount of available plant-based or vegan options. It wasn't going to be something you could get at any fast food place. If you wanted a vegan burger or Burger King, they were going to sell you, and I'm not making this up, a bun with some lettuce. And people would buy that shit, which is stupid. But people did. And they'd be like, look at me, I'm eating a vegan burger. There was no vegan ice cream. It just wasn't a thing. Commercially available products in not even just a restaurant, but if you went to a store, you would have to track down specialty to a natural food store, which I know they still exist, but that was the only place you could buy, vegan stuff. Soy milk tasted like blended up tofu with some water. The food for our movement was poor at best. So the amount of people that went vegan every year would be like, there'd be like three, if you looked at the chart, it'd be like three new people went vegan, five people stopped being vegan. It was like that for years. But finally, in the 2000s, it started becoming a thing. And then because of the internet and because of the more people doing it and because of demand, there were more products. And as there were more products, more and more people realized, this is something I could do. Then with streaming services, we got Netflix and we got documentaries like Game Changers or Cowspiracy on Netflix, and people were able to consume that. And then they say, if I watch that, let me just look and see what I could buy at my local supermarket that was vegan, and then started making those changes. So given the given my relatively short lifespan, in that I do feel old sometimes, but only because I used to jump out of planes for a living, or rather hit the ground after jumping into them. I'm given that I'm only 50, in that 32 years of my life being vegan, I feel like I've seen a gigantic change in that short period of time, that I would say for most other movements, it took them much longer. If we look at civil rights, women's rights, these are still ongoing issues. And while we have had strides in those movements, it took much longer. And in my country, we had an actual civil war over civil rights. And then, it's still an ongoing thing, in my opinion, today, where we're still working to get everybody the same rights. However, in the span of veganism, vegan has been a term since the 1950s. But in my short period of time being part of this movement from the 90s until now, it's become a real thing, to where I think a good portion, I'd have to see the statistics, but I'm pretty sure at least 10% of Gen Z is vegan. I'm not sure millennials or Gen X. That's a pretty good foothold. And as Gen Z matures, And as there's a new generation, I think that number is only going to go up. Now, is it too late for the planet? Is climate change already a thing? Well, I mean, climate change is a thing. But I really think this is going to, you know, mature into an everyday thing, and that there'll be more of us. And as there's more of us, the world will just be a better place. I think the world's always going to be pluses and minuses, and every movement's going to, you know, get hot and then fade a little bit. And yeah, like maybe what, 5 years ago with Beyond Meat's inception, things might have looked a little sexier. And now with Beyond Meat stock dropping, and, you know, maybe your favorite celebrity isn't vegan anymore, maybe people think it's vegan is over, it's a fad, but I think far from it. I think it's here to stay. It's getting bigger every day. And I'm very hopeful about the future for us.
Fantastic.
Good. Happy days.
Yeah. Thanks. Well, thanks so much.
Oh, sorry. Go on.
Yeah. Thanks so much for joining us, Bill. That's been absolutely fantastic. And it's been fascinating hearing about your history. And we'll look forward to seeing some more of your content soon. Any more books in the pipeline?
So I am planning on putting out a book about my time in Japan and recording the Final Fantasy X soundtrack. That was kind of my 5 minutes of fame when Final Fantasy X was out. Planning for that. I guess I'm going to try to get my shit together sometime this year and finish it up. I wrote it in Afghanistan, so it just needs to be edited. So hopefully next year, fingers crossed, I'll find a publisher and put it out. Otherwise, it's going on the Great Satan Amazon, which I would love to be able to branch out from Amazon. But, you know, we'll see.
Yeah. Okay. Amazing. Fantastic. We will look forward to it. That's fantastic. Thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thanks.
Cheers,
for having
Bill.
Me.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Take care.
Oh, I like Bill.
It was great.
Good. I like Bill a lot.
He had a very
he's good. I could have chatted with him.
A very listenable voice.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? It was just
really
nice to listen to.
Yeah, I could have listened to him for hours and hours and hours. I love it when we've had quite a lot of episodes like that, to be fair.
Yes, and especially the ancient vegans.
We always sort of talk about it, don't we, about when.
Yeah. The ancient vegans who have lived through the, like he said, you know, peanut butter and jam sandwiches every day. And
chips. And in all fairness, the ancient vegans that we have spoke to have been from the UK. And I believe it might have been, I'm not sure, but that's what I remember. And I think he talks about the punk rock movement, and Moby's talked about that a lot, like I've mentioned. But I think there was probably a bit more of a community in the UK around veganism.
Yeah, maybe.
Not massive, but around that sort of punk rock hippie type world. You might have found the odd person that you know you could befriend. Whereas the way he was talking, he was very isolated, and there was something I wanted to ask him, really, maybe next time if he comes on again, but about how, knowing that there's not enough food, but back then where there was very little vegan options, so to speak,
yes,
very limited options, but he just ploughed on.
Incredible.
You know, the integrity to go, I'm just going to keep doing this because this is the only option I have, and I'm going to continue to do it because I can't go the other way.
Yeah,
that takes a lot of willpower.
Yeah, absolutely. It's incredible, isn't it?
I don't even think. I think there'd be an argument that it isn't willpower. It's just the knowledge that you don't want to be part of killing animals.
No, that's very true.
To be able to, like he said, live on peanut butter and jelly sandwiches three times a day for however long,
just unbelievable.
Just going some
Yeah.
You know, I remember absolutely incredible. When, you know, when I was in the RAF and you know, I was obviously a carnist back then, and they were talking, they were taking the piss out of if you're vegetarian or vegan, you can have something else. But I dread to think what it was.
Oh God, yeah, that would
know,
have been grim, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but, you know, I remember watching it. I was in the RAF. We didn't really do foraging and living in a tree. But you know, I've watched
yeah,
TV,
you
watched
lived it up
programs, and I've known people that were in the army and the marines. You know, their training included, you know, skinning rabbits and squidging the crap out of worms so you could just eat them. And I'm like, surely you teach people to forage to find mushrooms and berries and fruit and stuff. But no, let's go hunt a rabbit and do it that way. It's a different way of looking at it, I think.
Yeah. Jesus.
That's what I mean. You know, we've only got a short space of time. Like, I'd love to explore that more with him, with Bill.
Yes. Yeah, it would be really interesting, wouldn't it? To go into that sort of detail. But maybe we'll get him back on another time when his next book comes out. And we'll ask him about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway,
cool, man.
Hope you've enjoyed that. If you've listened and you've thought, you know what, I've got an interesting story to tell, get in touch, drop us an email. Send us an email to howiveganpodcast@gmail.com.
Cheers, guys. See you later. Bye.
Bye-bye.